We're fading.
Can't we at least leave them with something to help them?
Yes. Gifts. I love gifts.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to Take Me to Your Reader, discussing adapted science fiction at its best and worst. I'm Seth.
I'm James.
And I'm Colin.
And this time, it seems like it's been a long time since we did this, and probably because it was, because we pre-recorded one for when James was going to be out, and
right.
Didn't release that for a while. So it's
like early April, and this is late May. It's been forever.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, this time we are going to be talking about A Wrinkle in Time, as we previously mentioned, I think, on the previous episode, which is a 1962 novel by Madeline L'Engle. It has been adapted a couple of times, and we're going to talk about two of those adaptations, film adaptations-ish.
Sort of.
Movie adaptations, I guess.
Yeah.
One was in theaters, and one was directing TV.
Right.
So I do want to note that I recently did an episode on Hugo's There about this book with Mandy Self, and I had thoughts on the book that I expressed in that episode. And so I'll probably pull back on my portion of the book talk today and let you guys talk about it, just because I don't want to repeat myself.
I have no idea what you said. So,
okay,
feel free to repeat yourself.
Yeah. The real lesson here is these guys do not listen to my other podcast.
Yep. I tried, but it's too long.
it was an hour, and you're like, oh, whatever. That's why you put on 1.5 speed. That's only 40 minutes long. You know.
Touché.
Yeah. Anyhow. A Wrinkle in Time, history with this material. First time for you, James?
First time for the book and the older movie, I suppose.
You had, your first experience was with the Oprah Winfrey movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Emily dragged me to go see it in the theater and back when it came out. Yeah.
We should have had Emily on this episode because she probably likes
it. You know, she didn't even remember it when we were going to watch this last night. She was like, I haven't seen this movie. I'm like, yes, you did.
Okay, maybe not then.
So, about that. Okay. And I haven't rewatched that movie since then until last night.
Okay. Sounds good. Colin, history with the material?
I hadn't seen any of the movies ever, but I read the book probably decades before James was born.
Right.
I think you were only alive for a decade before he was born, so...
Okay, one decade Fair. Before James was born.
Approximately when James was born, Colin was reading the novel.
Right.
Yes. And the rest of the series you have read as well, or?
No, I didn't proceed on.
You didn't? You've never read A Wind in the Door, Swiftly Children's Planet?
No.
Anything? Okay.
Or the other two.
You mentioned something sidebar while we were watching the movie about where some characters go. So did you just read Wikipedia or something?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
The Wikipedia summary.
Gotcha.
Okay. I take it you have read more of the series?
I have, yeah. So A Wrinkle in Time... My memory of it is that my mother read it to us. It could have been one of my older sisters. Mm-hmm. Because I have a sister named Meg.
Right.
So,
touche.
Yeah. So it was definitely a book series that was, mm-hmm. was kind of always in our family. And I remember reading the first three or having them read to me. I remember distinctly in high school reading A Wind in the Door and just hating every moment of it and having to do a book review of it. And I just got up there and said, this book is dumb. This is a really dumb book.
It's quite an enlightening review.
It was when I got in, that was when I had gotten into the part of my life where like I could be engaged by tie-in novels, like Star Trek novels and Star Wars novels, but any kind of world building that needed to be done to introduce me to anything, I had no patience with. And so I was not a good reader of things at that point.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What's changed?
Not much.
Not much. I was going to say.
I'm more okay with non-tie-in fiction these days. A lot of world building, you can lose me. But if it's done well, then it's, you know, yeah, it works. And, you know, these books do skew towards a younger audience. And so you'd think they still would have worked for me. But it's just, you know, I was a dumb 16-year-old. So... Now I'm a dumb 51-year-old.
Was it better on the reread then than your not 16s?
Yeah. I mean, so before I did the episode for Hugo's and I reread the book and I just read a chapter a night for a week, you know, and that gets you through the book. And like it's 10 minutes of reading per day kind of doesn't take very long at all. And then.
No, it didn't. It took about 2 whiskeys in an afternoon.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can easily read the book in a sitting, right? It goes down easy.
And immediately went back to raw whiskey. Oh, okay. Raw spirit, that's what.
Oh, right. <yeah. laughs> The Ian Banks
book,
yeah. You know, Scotland appropriate.
Right.
And then I checked out the audiobook as well just to refresh it because it was still a while until we recorded, so I refreshed it on the audio. But, you know what? I think I did it backwards. I think I listened to the audiobook and then it was too long and then like Mandy couldn't record. And so I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just read it then. So, and yeah, both both ways. It was an easy read, enjoyable read. It's a Newbery Award winner.
Yeah, so, 1963.
Yeah. So what'd you think of the book on the first read? You said it was a pretty easy read.
Yeah, pretty easy read. But I liked it. Yeah. It was one of those things where I determined I would probably like the book and it would be an easy read after reading just the first chapter. So it was nice.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that it was good. I liked the characters right off the bat, except Meg. Megan annoyed the crap out of me.
Really?
Up until the very end. I'm like, yeah, geez. But it tracks with her character. It was mostly the impatience thing. I'm like, come on.
Yeah, yeah. She has a little bit of an arc. And you know eventually
yeah.
she's going to
take
the hero's journey.
It works well with her arc, so I forgave it.
Yeah. Revisiting this one, did you like this one when you were a kid?
I did.
Okay. And as an adult, how was it rereading it?
I didn't like it quite as much.
Okay.
I was really annoyed by the voicing of Mrs. Witch, Miss Witch. Because all of her...
Yes.
Oh, well, yeah.
I think she would have fit right in with the crew from Galaxy Quest.
We need your help.
Yeah. Yes. That's like reading all that accented stuff. Like, it always reminds me of Mark Twain.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man.
It's really
I get what you're going for, but damn, this is painful.
Yeah, I read The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn to Ethan at some point. And I was like, oh, man, this is hard to read. I was more annoyed with Mrs. Who and all the constant quoting.
Quoting? Oh, I liked the quoting, though.
I didn't mind the quotes. I enjoyed the quotes,
yeah.
Like, it reminded me of like a person who constantly makes classical references or quotes movies or something, some weirdos that do that.
One of my friends says that, and I'm amazed by his recall and the depth of things he can like shoehorn into almost anything that we're talking about.
That's what she said.
That, and there's my other friend.
So yeah, it's different reading it as a kid and then as an adult. You know, as in a kid, you'd probably enjoy some of the stuff, like the drawn out, you know, Mrs. Witch language and stuff. And there's things that can annoy you as an adult, but not as a kid.
I imagine it might be kind of interesting being read to on that part.
Yeah. But
was it that way in the audiobook that you listened to?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How'd that come out?
It was a typical audiobook thing. I don't have a strong memory of it. Okay. But, I mean, all you have to do is draw it out just a little bit. You have to channel Oprah.
Right.
You get a Tesseract in. You get a Tesseract.
You get a Tesseract. Exactly.
Tesseract for everyone.
Yeah. But there's the other part of it that, you know, I'm curious I talked about this with Mandy. She has a small child and you know, I've got a large adult son now, and you have a couple large adult sons. And like being a father, you like it draws you into a different part of the book. You put yourself into the dad, you know, who abandoned his family without meaning to, you know, that gets you in the feels.
Yeah.
The book has been banned from different and opposing sides. You know, it's been banned as being too Christian.
Oh, Jesus.
It's been banned by Christians as being too occult. and so
whoops.
I always think a book is doing something right if it's getting banned by opposing groups.
It's like a banned Venn diagram.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's there's some definite Christian imagery in there and quotes and things brought into it, but it's also really new age.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, yeah, you're right. I mean, the New Age people are going to say it's too Christian, maybe. And the Christians are going to say, well, it's distorted by the New Age.
Right, but it's pre-New Age. I mean, New Age was more like 1980s, right?
Right, but it's currently on banned book list.
Yeah,
it's been like banned for 61 years. People have been trying to ban it for 61 years.
Yeah. I think the book is theistic in its worldview. And, well, here's the thing, right? In terms of talking about it as a book to be adapted, I was not surprised that neither of the movies really kept much of the Christian stuff. The Disney Channel one, a little more than the Oprah one. Yeah, I don't know why I keep calling it the Oprah, the DuVernay one.
Right? DuVernay, yeah.
Nah, it's the Oprah one.
Yeah.
She's the star power.
Yeah.
The draw to the theaters.
And I don't know, to some extent, I feel like there's something in the charm to the book. It's like it's got an innocent spirituality almost to it, where when you try and make it real in a movie or something, you're just going to screw it up. And trying to like genericize the spirituality is a mistake. And you may as well just go with far be it from me to say, but just go with what the book did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually surprised that there is not a Pure Films adaptation of it that emphasizes the Christian parts, you know, the psalms and the other stuff.
Oh, and then drops the New Agey kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of
that'd
surprising.
Be funny.
Yeah, it'd probably be terrible.
You probably.
Yeah.
And here I thought they couldn't get any worse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with Disney owning the IP, then there's no opportunity for anybody else to do that for another
Yeah, how long does it?
Death of the Author plus years 75 years. 2082.
2082.
Well, that's almost that doesn't say anything necessarily about the option on it. I mean, like movie options expire and rights expire, but...
Well, that's true. I mean, but, you know, it would become in the public domain in that time.
Right, right, right. And then anybody, then it's a free-for-all, right?
Yeah. Right. Everyone will be making Wrinkle in Time movies.
Right, right. Dark ones with Winnie the Pooh killing people.
Yeah.
yeah, I wonder about stuff like that. Because, like, there was the famous Fantastic Four movie that was made but never released, the Roger Corman one, in order for Fox to hold on to the rights to Fantastic Four.
Oh, right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So, anyhow, more talk about the book. What do you want to talk about the plot?
Should we talk about the plot?
A little bit. I mean, if you want to.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, so we have Meg and her brother, Charles Wallace, and their mom and the two middle brothers, and their dad's gone.
The middle children just get deleted.
Totally.
I know what that's like.
And Charles Wallace has some friends, and the friends say, well, we can help you find your father. And then they go on this time and space bending adventure. They end up talking to the happy medium who tells them, you know, how to find their father. Mm-hmm. And then they go to the planet of Kamazotz. And I'm trying to make this as generic as possible because everything I'm saying is in all the movie, in most of the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And they go to Kamazotz and Charles Wallace gets co-opted by the dark side. He becomes a Sith Lord. And Meg wins him back because that's her power is winning people. And then they get they free their father and they all go home happily ever after.
Yep. Big group hug. Right. All you need is love.
All you need is love.
Da, 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 da. Yeah. I'm curious. Okay, I want to know right now, anybody listening to this podcast, did you read this book first because of Roy Kent and Ted Lasso? Because that's the book that Ted gives Roy, is A Wrinkle in Time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Am I supposed to be the little girl? I'd like you to be.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, okay. That makes much more sense now.
So that's basically the plot. It's a, sort of a standard hero's journey kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a lot of ways. With the little girl as the protagonist.
Yes.
Protagonist. And, and you know, Calvin along there to look pretty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Of course, she's the standard nerdy girl who's beautiful when she takes her glasses off.
Yeah. Right. You should really smile more.
Oh. Yes.
Kamazotz guys don't make passes at nerdy girls that wear glasses.
Right.
That's what was wrong with that one. She wasn't wearing glasses in that movie.
Yep.
Dang it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she put on the glasses to test her.
Right.
Well, but that was Mrs.
Well, yeah, that was the test of glasses, though.
Glasses?
Yeah. So. And I thought it was kind of weird because in the book, it was very clear that some people got gifts and Meg's gift were her faults. That's all she didn't get the test rat glasses, so she could pull her dad out.
No, she got the glasses. She got the glasses and was given her blessing was her faults.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, because that's where she's able to see him in the column. There's some stuff that's very evocative in the book when they get to Kamazotz. And here's another thing to talk about. The book goes fast, right? Like, it does not, it doesn't take a lot of time before they're off on their adventures, and then they're in one place, and then they're in another place, and they're in another place, and they're back home, and the book's over.
Yes.
And that's just kind of the way it works.
Zip, 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 zip.
Yeah.
Well, writing to people with short attention spans.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's not a criticism. So there are some.
No, that's good. Yeah, yeah.
That go on too long. But once they're on Kamazotz and you know there's the whole conformity thing and everybody bouncing the ball at the same time and there's the rhythm of everything and I do find that very evocative in the book when the man with the red eyes starts saying let's do multiplication tables and you know and trying to get everybody in synchronization.
Yeah,
and then the heartbeat. Or the breathing of the it, which is the big brain. Right.
Right.
I thought that's well done.
So did you chant multiplication tables in school?
No.
You, James?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we did multiplication tables, but we didn't.
Yeah.
I don't remember doing them as a chant.
Yeah, no, we read them out loud and then write them down. And, yeah, yeah.
Well, then there's the song, right? The interim song?
The what song?
The interim song?
I don't think I know the interim song.
Oh, you can go look it up on YouTube.
Sometime. Okay. I know the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And...
Yes. No, it's got a multiplication table in it for squares.
Oh, I thought it was about the dance move.
The centipede, inchworm.
Right.
The mashed potato.
Kind of, in a lot of ways, mostly female characters driving the plot in the book, which is kind of fun. Evidently, when you look up the publication history, she had a terrible time getting it published.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she shopped it around for a long time and couldn't get anybody. And they're like, yeah, you need to make some changes. And she went, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, no thanks.
And she attributed it to having a female protagonist in a science fiction book. And this was in 1962.
It's true. Yeah.
Right.
Just, I guess it was, you know, before the beginning of the New Age, but there were still some fairly established science fiction authors who were women at that time.
Yeah. Le Guin was working.
Yeah. Andre Norton and McCaffrey.
I don't know. What else to talk about the novel?
I think the whole New Age aspect of it, to me, kind of goes along with the anti-conformity thing. You know, like in today's world, right, there's a lot of anti-vaccine sentiment. Mm-hmm. And some of it is non-conformity. Some of it is fear and miseducation. Some of it is misinformation.
Right.
But some of it is, oh, you know, my kids don't need to be vaccinated. And the truth is, in an absolute sense, a certain amount of people don't have to be vaccinated because we try to have like a 91% coverage rate. Mm-hmm. And so you may not have to, but then somebody else has to because you opt out.
Right. It becomes a tragedy in the commons kind of situation.
Yeah. Not everybody can be vaccinated. It's the problem with that logic. Mm-hmm. That's where the logic falls apart.
Yeah. And the vaccines aren't 100% effective. And so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to be said for conformity in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Like we all agree to rules for driving on the road.
Right.
Yeah.
But not the hyper-conformity that they were talking about.
No, that's such an extreme.
Given the 60s, it was kind of an affront to communism.
Yeah.
Especially the red eyes and the red ball.
Oh, good point. The red stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think those resonances are in there. And, you know, talking about, you know, if everything was planned out for us, then what was it? If we knew ahead of time what was going to happen, we'd be like the people on Kamazots with no lives of our own, with everything all planned and done for us. Right. So they have the planned society ideas were very popular in, you know, 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. The little planned communities and things like that.
Planned communities, yeah.
With all the little cookie cutter houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Kamazots is the extreme version of that, right? Where everybody comes out and does their little Truman Show thing, you know.
The American dream with the chicken and car or whatever.
The what?
Car. Having a car in every home, and a chicken
in every pot
for dinner. Chicken in every pot.
Right.
That's what it is.
And two and a half kids.
Yeah. Eisenhower, right?
yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't mind the red lines, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the kind of, I was calling it ecumenical rather than New Agey, but you know, when they talk about the warriors, you know, that come from Earth to fight the darkness, right? And it names off Gandhi and Einstein and Jesus.
All these, like, philosophers and physicists and
people
that can think outside the box.
Mm-hmm. But, you know,
Houdini.
Buddha,
right?
You know, yeah, exactly.
A Buddha,
yeah, gets mentioned there as well. There's, of course, the happy medium, which is a crystal ball, so it must be the occult, right?
Yes.
So,
well, and a happy medium, a spiritualist,
right? Yeah, that's where I remember all the book banning talk about Harry Potter, right? He's taking the class in divination.
Yeah.
And in a world where magic was real, that would make sense, right?
But she was a joke. I mean,
no, she was real.
She was real, but the class was a joke.
Yeah.
And to be honest, she was kind of a joke too.
Yeah.
Aside from when she had her extremely rare, no more than one every 2 to 3 book pronouncements.
Yeah, but some of the book banning, and I mentioned this to Mandy on the other podcast, was that Elaine lived with a family in college who they wouldn't allow their children to read the Chronicles of Narnia because there was a witch.
Oh, wow.
And because there was a witch, that meant that it was evil.
And I guess they'd never been to Endor.
Right. Yeah, they never read the books of Samuel and Kings, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's, Second Samuel, probably.
That's ironic.
What? That is in the Bible?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, she calls up the spirit of Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. The impulse to ban things just because they don't quite conform to, because it's like, it's an impulse against imagination.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are books that probably should be banned, mm-hmm. like Mein Kampf.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. I mean, interesting to study, but should we be like reading it commonly and mm-hmm. practicing it?
Right.
I enjoy watching the videos of the guys who go around to town hall meetings and talk about these. There's a book in the library that has a man whose daughters have sex with him on successive nights and bear children by him. And they're like, well, we should ban that book. And he's like, well, that's in Genesis. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you about Exodus. It gets really bad then.
Right.
A lot of that City Hall stuff is all stuff taken out of context anyway.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nuts. And not only people quote things that completely out of context.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're obviously doing it on purpose for their own purposes, not for anybody else's well-being.
Yeah.
Or when they ask you, you know, they ask them, did you read this book? No, but I know all about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Noted.
Yeah.
We need to be talking a lot about this whole book banning thing because I think it's offensive.
It's gotten to us.
Yeah.
It's a good sticking point. I'm offended by the banning of books.
It's the kind of thing that never goes away, right? Somebody always wants to ban a book.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I did like, so, okay, back to the book. Central Intelligence, which is funny. Yeah. And you were talking about the IT, right? Which is always in capital letters.
Right.
Like, oh, IT.
Yep. Yeah, when I was first reading the book, I read it as IT for a while, mm-hmm. and then it became IT, but it still became a little bit of IT with the darkness and... Yep.
They control the internet, you know.
They control everything. They try and control everything.
Did you need to turn Camazotz off and turn it back on and everything will be fine?
The darkness is off again.
Have you rebooted your Camazotz?
That's what it is. The darkness is just a fragmented hard drive. You just need to run a universe defrag on it.
Yes.
Or install Linux.
The irony is there's no brain in IT.
Yeah. Right. So anything else to talk about the book? I enjoyed it. It's fun.
Yeah. Short,
I have the whole box set, so one of these days I should reread the window.
Oh, do you really? How many books are there?
Five.
Huh. Do you think they'll ever make another movie? Sequels, I suppose?
I don't know. I mean, looking at the adaptations, I'm not sure that this is a good book to adapt.
Right.
So, for reasons...
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. But yeah. For reasons I talked about earlier, I'm not sure how well it can be adapted. And I mean, certainly it's not an adaptation that can necessarily please everybody.
Right.
But yeah, I have the whole set. And evidently, there's some sort of explicit sexy times stuff in one of the books later on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So,
do they still have the same characters?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyhow, talk about movies?
Sure.
Should we start with the one we just watched or start with the other one?
You want to go chronologically or not?
Let's talk about 2003 first.
Okay. 2003. Well, I will say one thing that I appreciate, this book starts with the cliche line that you've heard a million times. It was a dark and stormy night. This is the one that coined that. And right. I appreciate that neither movie had like a voiceover saying that at the beginning or opening words on That's it nice. That said that. So I like that.
Well, no, it opens up with Meg in school, so we get to learn that she's a troubled student and that, you know, people suspect that part of her troubles come from the fact that she hasn't had her dad around and then he, you know, ran off.
Yeah. The casting is kind of interesting because Mrs. What's-It is played by Alfre Woodard. We don't have a lot of description of the Mrs.'s in the books other than they kind of look like bag ladies.
Yeah.
But they're also shapeshifters, and so I don't know why anyone would ever complain about the way they looked in an adaptation.
Yeah. Has anyone complained?
No, I don't okay. think that anybody necessarily.
I was going to say, is this like a lightning thief situation?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, the book, a white reader is always going to read a character as default white, right?
Yeah.
Because it's worth mentioning if they're non-white, right?
Right.
No, not necessarily.
I don't know. I liked her. I like Alfred. You know, anyway.
Yeah.
But.
I don't know most of the rest of the cast. There are a bunch of, that guy. Oh, yeah, it's that guy.
Yes.
It was a lot of that.
Yeah, a lot of Toronto actors that you've seen in a bazillion science fiction projects.
Yeah.
Especially the man with red eyes. I know I recognized him from a dozen things. And that, like, the mom was in, like, Smallville and a bunch of other
X-Files
stuff. Yeah.
I thought overall the casting was good.
I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was spectacular. I did think it was odd that Meg didn't have glasses.
Right.
Because then you can't have the moment of Calvin commenting about how, you know, no, put your glasses back on. I want to be the only one who knows how beautiful your eyes are.
I like the nerd look. Yeah. It's in now.
You're pro-nerd.
Right? I did kind of like the way Meg stood up to her teacher. And not stood up to her teacher. She gave her teacher a hard time.
Yeah.
But I felt like also like she that would was be, funny, in my school, she would have been a legend for that.
Right.
Yeah, so.
She totally burned him. That was
a pretty good impression. You know, with the let your fingers do the walking.
Oh, she just totally aped him.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when you talked about the difficulty in adapting a book like this, it's because it has children that are so young.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find kids that can really act well at that age.
Right.
And I think in both movies, that's something we see from the Charles Wallace's pretty well.
Oh, that they do a good job?
That they don't do a good job.
Okay.
It's hard to, you know, they don't have enough life. To draw from to say, this is the kind of thing I'm supposed to be portraying. And
It's rare to get somebody that young to be able to act like that. That's why Ender's Game was aged up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. And you know, to go back to talking about the Lightning Thief, right? These kids are kind of young and the acting is decent, but not amazing.
Right.
So
it'll get better. Because they'll be more practiced.
Right.
In season two.
Right. In 3 years when we get it. All the kids' voices will have changed. All the boys anyway.
Yeah. So what else can we say about it? So this was adapted straight. Actually, it was originally made into a miniseries with 2 2-hour episodes.
Right.
And then was edited down to be a 3-hour complete runtime with commercials.
Okay. So there's, is there an extended version of it someplace that you can...
Not that I can find anywhere.
Okay. So it aired on the Disney Channel.
It aired on the Disney Channel.
So in the height of bundled cable.
Right.
Yeah. Kind of, in the time they were making Halloween Town and a bunch of other, popular appeal movies with low budgets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, not a lot of A-list actors, which is okay. A lot of the actors did, like the dad, I thought did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom, when she was in the flashback scene... Oh, Margaret, this is all just going to be so fun.
Oh, the fake. Yeah. The fake mom. The Stepford mom.
Yeah.
Right.
The twins, the other brothers are included. The middle siblings are at least in this movie.
In this one.
Yeah. They're not part of the plot in the book. They're not part of the plot in the movie either. Right.
But they're there.
Yeah.
And it seems like this movie took a lot of time and effort to try and be highly canonical. There's definitely some divergence in it later on.
But right.
It's like at one point you mentioned, I'm going to be disappointed if there's no hot chocolate sandwiches. And like 30 seconds later, there's Charles Wallace doing this thing. And like,
I only said that because there wasn't any in the 2018 movie. And I was very disappointed.
There was a slight reference to it. He was heating
there
up milk.
There was. Right? And we'll get to that when I get there, I guess. Because I did not like that movie for that reason. Okay. For multiple reasons, but...
Right.
Yeah.
it definitely keeps the whole Calvin's mom's white trash thing going, which I feel like, you can change that. And I would approve of a change to it.
Calvin, is honest to his character. He's made some decisions based on the way his family is that he's not going to be that way.
Yes. Yeah. The list of Earth warriors does not include Jesus in the Disney Channel adaptation. No. Does include
Frank Zappa,
Saint Francis of Assisi.
Saint Francis.
Oh, okay, so at least you get some Christian representation in there.
And Einstein. I think they said Gandhi. I don't remember.
Yeah. And there's a later reference of Saint Paul is quoted. Right. Is one of the Mrs. Who quotes?
Yes.
Or Mrs. Yeah.
Who?
Mrs. Who? Yeah. So there's something in there. So it turns out to be like a two-hour plus movie.
129 minutes.
129 minutes.
I found it a little boring.
Yeah. The pacing was slow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting here going, oh, it's really canonical. It's really boring. And so what? I think there's just a pacing problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's a brisk book and a movie adaptation of it should move along. And this one it dwelled on things that I felt like we don't need to dwell on that. I mean, I liked a lot of the art design. Of course, it's 2003 era television budget CG, right. Which is it's sort of like video game
looking stuff, yeah,
from the late 90s. When Mrs. What's It transforms, you need to blur your eyes, avert your eyes. It's not very good.
I mean, it did look pretty canonical, though.
It did, yeah. It wasn't quite the way I pictured it. It looked like somebody had been like, that's good enough.
Yeah, she doesn't need a torso.
Right.
Right.
Well, I guess if she doesn't have a torso, then you avoid a lot of potential...
That's a fair point.
Exposure problems.
True.
Touché.
not that any of the supernatural creatures have gender in particular, right? It's explicit that the happy medium is above he or she. And Mrs. What's-It refers to... Says
she switches.
Oh, I haven't seen her in a long time. I love spending time with him.
Yeah,
or something like that, which I thought was kind of funny.
Pronoun switching. I was like, huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So who knew pronoun switching in the early 2000s?
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. So it is pretty canonical, and it keeps most of the major beats. The confrontation with the man with red eyes is slightly different, but
right.
than in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to wonder why, too. That was kind of weird. Because I'm not sure I liked the direction they took necessarily, but was it hard for them to think about how to visually adapt it? I don't know.
You're very much in the character's viewpoints, right? And so there's a lot of internalization in the book that it's really hard to translate to movies. I don't envy them that task.
Right.
But then, at the end where Meg wins Charles back over with the power of... Love,
All you need is love.
Yeah. And then she goes around and tells everybody, hey, everybody, you're all free. And I thought, in reality, the people who were part of the support of the man with red eyes would just go on continuing to enforce the edicts, and because it kept them in power.
Not always. Think about the way the McCarthy era fell apart.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, but you kind of do have to, you have to swing the pendulum a little bit so that it is not to anybody's advantage to hold that line any longer.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure it really mattered in the movie anyway. Like, they could have done with all that, I think. Done without it, right?
They could have left Kamazots rather than freeing Kamazots.
Yeah. I mean, they already did free Kamazots by virtue of, I don't know if they killed it or disabled it or whatever.
Yeah.
Loving it.
I mean, really, they just escape, right?
Yeah.
And push the darkness back a little bit because they didn't get Charles Wallace on their side.
Right.
And I guess, you know, the argument for the people being freed is they no longer have the conformity being enforced. And so without it being enforced, they'll go back to being free agents.
But were they really free if they didn't explicitly kill it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, if they did kill it, then there's no chance of a sequel.
True.
Oh, no, wait. Or is it just part of the... Is it a sub part of the darkness?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. It's you could destroy it and then have the rest of the darkness to fight later. And,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fair enough. It's like the manifestation of the darkness on Kamazots.
Hmm. Yep. Got it.
And there's different manifestations of it on Earth.
You thinking of something in particular?
I'm sure no one can imagine how there could be any evil in our world. Anything else to talk about that movie? I thought it was fine. It was okay.
Would you watch it again?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No, I would not.
Which is sad, you know. It's one of those things that I like a canonical movie because I like the book. I want to see a visualization of it. I know that some people really like having people, you know, other screenwriters come in and work in their world. John Scalzi is famous for saying, "Yeah, you know, I've had my say about this. Someone else, when they adapt it, they can do their thing."
Yeah.
And then you get the whole flip side of that with George R. R. Martin and Neil Gaiman, who have famously like stood their ground and said, "No, you will not make these changes to my books." Mm-hmm. Like Neil Gaiman pushed off any adaptation of Sandman for 20 or 25 years until he found someone that would follow his vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To him, that's what was important.
Yeah.
And so really, when it comes down to adapting, it's personal preference and...
Yeah. And I think, you know, it would have been possible to fix this one with, you know, having slightly better special effects and figuring out the pacing. Because I can't imagine like a 3-hour version of this would have been...
Oh,
I nodded off. I'm going to be honest. I nodded off during that movie.
Really?
Yeah.
When you watched it with us?
Okay.
Yeah, there were parts where I started to. I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I got shake up. Yeah. I'm awake now.
Okay. What did you think of, before we move on, what did you think of Aunt Beast?
Oh,
Chewbacca with no eyes.
It looked like the beginning of the Star Wars Holiday Special with the Wookiees.
Yeah.
Not easy to do practically, right? The tentacled, furry animal.
Yeah,
right. Maybe easy to do now.
But it's a fun character in the book. It felt that whole chapter felt comforting. So
it'd be interesting to see if they went with a full cartoon animation adaptation instead of live action to see what would happen for pacing and visualization and everything else.
They missed now that I think about it, the one thing I did like about the Healing Planet, I guess, was all the kind of different philosophical things they went into about how different beings experience the world differently and all that stuff.
Because Aunt Beast couldn't see,
right,
but they still knew about the darkness.
From Meg's perspective, it was a gray planet, right? Like, well, who cares if you don't see? But they see. But they experience it, you know, differently, other things. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was funny how they're having a hard time describing seeing. Like, really, guys? Come on.
Yeah.
Like, damn it, Beck. Mm-hmm. Another part that I found her annoying for.
Yeah.
But.
All right. Anyhow, 2018 movie. I saw the trailer for it and threw up in my mouth a little and thought, the visual look of that movie was not what I wanted from Wrinkle in Time. I knew it from the moment I saw the trailer. The representation of the missuses. I thought
they don't look like bag ladies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And I thought, nope, this is
well, at least they referenced stealing the sheets. They didn't reference that in this movie.
Yeah.
In 2003.
True.
But
they're
a little bit too beautiful.
Just too shiny and too made up and you know, maybe if someone wants a colorful representation of that, then more power to them. It's just not like, it's not what it just looked like a big green screen movie to me. And I don't like those anymore. I've seen a few too many of those. And
But in science fiction and fantasy, there's huge opportunities for doing big green screen movies.
Sure. I just like it to be a little more subtle, I think.
So in this case, they made a change to the adaptation. They changed the tone of the story by injecting all this color into it, which is great for a kid, for a lot of kids' movies, right? And you're saying they went for a change and it didn't work for you.
It's not even so much a change. It's just a choice in how to... I mean, they didn't have to make any character changes to do that, right? They just the art style was what I didn't care for. There is no art style in the book. It's words right on a page.
No, but the world is described in a certain way.
Yeah.
And if you change that styling to some other styling, then...
Yeah. So Storm Reed plays Meg, and she's been... She was in the Invisible Man movie that we watched. She was in the...
Right.
The Last of Us recently. She's been doing a lot of good work, and I like her. And Chris Pine was in it, who's not in it for a lot of it.
Although because he plays a dad.
There's flashbacks, and he's married to... Gugu and Batha Ra, and they're a very pretty couple, and you got to think they would have good looking kids, which they do. Although Charles Wallace was adopted.
Yeah. But why?
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand why they even bother with that. Like,
yeah, I don't understand that. I don't know why the family wasn't already just intact at the beginning of the movie.
Right. I guess I could see dropping the twins weren't very consequential, but it still wouldn't.
So I
would have liked to have them thrown around.
Right. There's no twins. They deleted the middle children, and I get it. I'm a middle child.
Oh, now I can talk about my problem with the hot chocolate.
Okay. Yes.
Damn it, because it pissed me off. The reason why it was annoyed the crap out of me is because Emily was asking about, why are they boiling milk? And I'm like, to make hot chocolate. Wait, I can't tell you that because we got to see if it happens. But it never happened. I have a feeling this movie was... edited by the studio or something.
Interfered with?
Yes. Because there was a lot of bad editing, just random cuts. To me, the exposition in this movie was terrible.
It was, yeah.
Absolutely terrible. Just it bounced all over the place. There's no like real continuity in the story and the exposition that needed to happen to flush out the characters. Not putting onto it. but the hot chocolate thing, like they totally dropped the ball on the sandwiches and the chocolate, and we should have met all the people we needed to meet in the stormy situation, and we didn't.
It
bugged the crap out of me.
That was odd.
It was just very odd. It was the thing. I think that's why they graded me. It was just seemed like somebody dropped the ball there, or they cut it out for some, because it looked like it almost could was there, and they had cut out, but why?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Anyway,
were there deleted scenes on the DVD?
I don't know enough to look.
He watched the DVD. But it wasn't just that scene. There was a lot in the movie where it seems like they just cut something and moved on to this next thing, and there was chunks missing. There was no, it wasn't fluid. It didn't flow right.
Yeah. Even some of the dialogue was a little choppy. And it just felt like it was ad-libbed. I need to say, Mrs. Witch, we have to help them.
Right. Like,
yeah.
But why? There was almost no why for almost anything they did established in the movie.
It didn't build any particular sort of sense of dread or... I don't know, it just didn't hold together well for me.
Yep.
It was
exactly
a big problem with
it. Yeah.
Which is odd. Ava DuVernay is a very good director. And so, it makes me wonder,
like, yeah, exactly. Like the studio. Like, I like to say the studio. They're kind of like Fantastic Four, right?
And this one, you know, they squeezed even more religion out of it and made it more just pantheism kind of energy. It's the evil is not evil. It's an energy.
Right.
And come on. And they kind of lost crystals
they lost the distinction between it and the darkness as well. So when you defeated it, you were done.
And it was like the darkness was Kamazot itself.
Yeah. It was everything else. Kind of was weird. It was Kamazot itself as opposed to a
symptom of the disease.
Exactly. Like, Kamazot was just one of the many planets that have been subdued.
I also, what was the point of Calvin in this movie? I couldn't find one.
I don't even remember Calvin in that movie.
See, 2 minutes ago. What's the point of this movie again?
I mean, like, not that Calvin has any great strikes in the other movie either, or that he has a major, major role in the book. But, you know, he's the one that's supposed to call out Mr. Murray Tesser. You know, he... he realizes that they need to get out of there right now because they're all going to get sucked into it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Mr. Murray makes that decision and Meg is very angry that, you know, you left Calvin, you left Charles Wells behind.
Yeah.
And I wanted to see some of that in this movie. And there was a little bit, but well, not much.
She was
pretty angry. Calvin didn't really move the plot at all in any way other than to have the little sort of romantic subplot thing.
But that's more of a nod than...
It is, yeah. I mean, the character's there, but like, I don't know. He's a good character in the book, and like, he's good with words, right? Meg is good at math, and I like there being complementary characters in the book, mm-hmm. and here I didn't get. I did like her bouncing the basketball off the snobby girl's face.
Yeah, she did. There was a lot of good angry acting, I think, for her, and especially
She's a good actor, so I really enjoy her.
Yeah, she did it so well. I still didn't like her character. Right. Wasn't the most the actors, Meg.
Yeah. So one thing that's really creepy in the book is when Charles Wallace gets taken over by it, his pupils disappear.
Right.
And I wanted to see that in one of the adaptations, and it wouldn't have worked in this one because of they kind of had a kid with dark eyes, right? Mm. It's really only going to work with a kid with light eyes. Because with dark eyes, you're just not going to get the same effect of seeing the pupil disappear.
Well, unless you've made it a point of shooting his face so you can see them, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, after the change, boom, they're gone. And, you know, I wanted to say something about making Charles Wallace adopted. It allows a lie to come in and say, you know, he's not my dad.
Right.
Because he's really not his dad. Mm-hmm. Whether he loved him or not, he never knew him because he'd been gone for 4 years. And mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting uptake.
Yeah.
And that kid did angry really well.
He did. Yeah. They gave him more than he could handle to do. He was good in parts of it. And then other parts, I thought, you should have shot that.
Well,
you know, it, like a couple of scenes with like young Anakin in the Phantom Menace. I'm like,
oh, jeez. Yeah.
Man, you made now a that's choice. Pod racing.
Yeah. You made a choice to have a kid this age play Anakin. And that was just bad from the beginning. I mean, there are good kid actors, but you gotta, you know, it's a lottery kind of thing. But mm-hmm. yeah, like with the eyes, I would have liked to, like, if I was casting this, I'd be like, okay, I want a kid with bright blue eyes so that I can see, yeah, I can see the pupils clearly and I can see them disappear. So that would have been like a change that, or not a change, that would have been like something that I emphasized. And with an adopted kid, he doesn't have to be in a particular race.
Right.
Where I got the impression that Meg was a natural child of... Right. Mr. and Mrs. Murray.
Right.
And she looked like she could be.
Yeah.
The movie was a little too much of a music video. You know, there's lots of pop music, needle drops.
Yeah. That was probably the thing I liked the most about Emily. Yeah, Emily too. She really liked the music. But it's like,
oh, really?
That's probably the thing I liked most about the movie is the music.
It was the thing I liked the least. Because I'm really. We don't need to make this into a music video.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like for me, it's kind of like The Greatest Showman. Best soundtrack, worst movie. Yeah,
never did see it. Do not want to.
Oh, love that movie.
Yeah, too much auto-tune, I'm sure. So, you know, like in certain montages, it makes sense. Or like when they're flying on the flying cattus, on the flying
cabbage
magic carpet.
Oh, jeez.
That was an interesting
adaptation. I kept waiting for A Whole New World to cue in. Right.
Exactly.
Or magic carpet ride.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, yeah.
And why not make her a centaur that they climb on the back of?
They could have easily... fix that situation from the earlier movie.
Yeah. Honestly, I did not mind it because sure, but, whatever. It's a different planet. It's a shapeshifter. She can shift into whatever shape she wants, and I don't really care. But then the kids could somehow fly. And that was a strange choice.
Oh, I think that was a C-117 kind of thing where they were like,
oh, the vomit gauntlet. Yeah.
We're falling all at the same rate, and you feel like you're flying, but you're really not.
Oh, so one adaptation I did approve of was I said, you know, I didn't want anybody to say it was a dark and stormy night, you know, to start the movie, but when Mrs. Watson is first introduced, even though I don't approve of how clean the sheets were that she was using. She said, talk about your dark and stormy night. And it was off, you know, it was in the background. And
right.
That was kind of a nice nod to the book. Right.
You know, she did steal clean sheets though. She took them off the drying line, right?
They
should have been clean.
I know, but I just, I'm channeling my inner Colin here. I want to see a dirty looking Mrs. Watson. So
more bag lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she was described as like a vagrant, right?
Yeah. 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 Totally. Yeah.
Well, for them to hide in society, that's a perfect way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's a great way. And for sure. And to get unnoticed too, right? Be unnoticed.
Like, yeah. 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 And then you bring the other dynamic in, you know, well, like, why are my kids hanging around these women? So the mom's automatically not trusting.
Yeah.
But Charles Wallace can see things as they really are because he's had, like, you know, psychic converse with them. And
Yeah. The movie, I think, does skew a little younger. Like the magic carpet ride kind of thing, I'm sure, was great for
kids.
Oh,
and all the visuals. Yeah.
And all the colors and everything.
You know, it's a very colorful movie.
So it's got Mindy Kaling and Reese Witherspoon and Oprah, gigantic Oprah for some reason.
Right.
Who had a much easier time communicating in this movie. I'm sure it was in the contract. Like, I don't want to talk like Mrs. Witch.
What's the point of making someone talk like that?
To be true to the book. You should know this, Colin.
I did like the when they landed on
Kamazots.
Kamazots first, and went into what I viewed as our HOA, bouncing the ball. Like,
right,
that was sufficiently creepy.
That was. That, yeah. I thought that was well executed.
Yeah,
it's just
that was probably the best executed adaptation of both movies.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it harkens back to things like the Midwich Cuckoos and the Stepford Wives,
right?
And all these great sci-fi classics, right? Yeah. Where you've lost your identity.
Yeah,
for the purpose of conforming and
and all the wives came out, all the mothers came out, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, totally separate wives. Yeah,
is that Galifianakis? Yeah, I can't
there
say. You it.
Go.
I was just thinking of Evan. There was an episode of the Sci-Fi Christian a long time ago where Matt tried to say that name, and Matt's much more innocent than Ben is. Ben will drop lots of swear words, and he tried to say Galifianakis, and it came out. And they bleeped it.
Oh,
because of how badly
Gala F this.
And Ben just laughed at him. So yeah, I didn't really care for his version of the happy medium, you know, and the chanting and standing on one foot thing.
Oh. It was like going to a yoga class.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said that Meg doesn't tesser well because she must be one with the universe and with herself.
I mean, I guess it does kind of lay the groundwork for what happens later when it tries to seduce Meg by showing her the ideal version of herself.
Right.
With sleek hair and the makeup and the nice clothes and everybody likes me. And
She did have glasses.
Yeah, so. She had glasses, but boy, talk about playing off yourself there, where she got to be the heroine Meg that we know and love that isn't sure of herself versus this made up.
Her neighbor, right? The neighbor girl.
Yeah.
The mean girl. She got to be the mean girl.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought there were some nice parts about showing, you know, that sometimes people that treat other people badly don't really like themselves and they're trying to fit in and they're willing to sacrifice to do it. Yeah. And so that those notes were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was okay with those. And like the change with Calvin having an awful father worked for me. You know, and it's an awful home life. It doesn't have to be he's one of 11 kids and nobody really cares about him.
Right.
And he calls home and nobody had noticed that he was even gone. Right.
Right.
Where this, it's, you know, the dad being hard on him, you know, pushing him to be the best at everything. And, oh, you got a 92? What are you doing? You know, or 89?
82.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm like, eh.
Yeah. And, you know, the movie, although we've been talking about how it might skew to kids, it didn't review very well. So it was only 42% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It did not make a ton of money. Mm-hmm. I think it barely broke even on budget, which is not what you want. It's an investment. You want to get some kind of, you know, dividend return on it at least.
Yeah. I think the 2003 movie is like a full point higher on IMDb than the 2018 one.
Wow.
So. Wow.
And then when you look at the people they had in, you know, Ava DuVernay as the director, the lady wrote Frozen and Frozen 2. She was the screenwriter.
No, there's the problem.
No, Frozen is, they're great movies.
Yeah.
You must not like them.
I don't.
No.
Tangled is a better movie. Sorry. I will die on that hill.
I might have to think hard about that one.
Lion King is a better movie.
Lion King's a great movie.
Yeah. Although I would watch Tangled any day.
No, way better than Lion King.
I kind of liked Michael Pena as Red, as the man with the red eyes. It was a very different thing on the beach. And that was a different take on Kamazots and them being fooled, you know, by him.
I did like the Sandy thing though. It went with the Sandy thing a lot, I suppose.
Yeah. So I wanted the turkey dinner.
I really wanted the turkey dinner.
And so all I wanted was for somebody to say there's a turkey sandwich, and I would have been okay.
That's I thought the turkey dinner would come out in the 2003 movie.
Yeah, me too.
And they were even in a diner. Like, opportunity missed.
Yeah.
But oh well.
and I liked the it adaptation where it's like you're inside of a big brain with synapses firing and stuff. I was actually okay with that. It was a little dumb with the synapses grabbing her and stuff, but
I found them saying the it to be really obnoxious in that movie.
Is that like when Californians say the five instead of I-5?
Sure. Yep, the five, the 405. Yeah, that's true. Yep. Good point. Yep.
Would you say 405, I-5?
No, I'd say 5 or 405. The I is too much work.
26 for Californians.
Nice. But yeah, I just kept saying the it, well, instead of just saying it. Because I always said it in the book. They said it in the 2003 movie. And then it was the it in this movie. I'm like, why did you add in the it? I'm like,
yeah,
it. I don't know. It could just emphasize. Intonation takes care of the part. You know, get rid of the intonate, you're good. You can see I had a lot of problems with this movie.
Yeah. This movie also lists the heroes of Earth. Of course, no Jesus. I wonder if, like, somebody writing this, are they like, we can't put Jesus in there. If we put Jesus in there, then we've got to do Muhammad. Then we've got to do everybody. And, like...
So do it.
Yeah, why not do it? Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus and Buddha. Good.
Yeah. I mean, some Christians would be offended by having Jesus and Buddha in the same thing.
Right. But do you think you're not offending them by taking an internationally known book and not putting Jesus in it?
Yeah. This Jesus deletion will not stand. The movie kind of went for some trippy 2001 sort of stuff at the end when she finally tessers on her own.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which I didn't see a whole lot of reason to do that.
Okay. So we've been ragging on this movie for a while. What would you guys do to change it more to your liking?
I would stop trying to adapt this book, I think.
Yeah. You think it's unadaptable?
In some ways, I think it is. Because, yeah, I mean, no, you could do... Dang it. A straighter adaptation of it, where you keep in the ecumenical, new agey kind of thing where, you know, it's spiritual but not specifically religious.
But you don't think, is that the deal breaker for you? Because we've talked about pacing and acting and editing and all kinds, and the soundtrack, which is not something we usually talk about in adaptation.
True.
Right. Yeah.
And I will swear that they clanged one of those chords in the 2003 adaptation.
I didn't catch it. Tim didn't catch it. So
maybe it's some really rich chord that, you know, tuba players can't hear.
Maybe. Who knows? All you hear is the bass. You're all about that bass.
Yeah. So if you have to put the ecumenical thing back into it, I don't think that was the problem with this.
No, I mean, I think if this is a cosmic evil that's being fought, right, you need to make it something better than the vaguely... spiritual energy thing.
I'm thinking like the Nothing from Never Ending Story.
Yes.
Yeah. Where it's more.
I've not seen that movie.
Oh, really? No, you know what I'm talking about then. Never mind. It's Colin, though.
But maybe you're right, though, right? Because when you tell kids that is bad, that's all you have to say. Mm-hmm. As adults, we want to know, what kind of bad is it? Is it organic? Is it technological? Right. Is it a philosophical problem that we have to deal with? Kids just don't care. Right. Well, it's the darkness.
It's a great cosmic furball.
Yes.
It's coming for you.
It's the cod liver oil of doom. You're going to have to drink it unless we change the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess in Never Ending Story, the nothing is literally just the nothing. Like everything disappears into it. It's just black. There's nothing to see. So it's like this, like the, whatever it works for, the darkness. It's like the darkness in this.
Okay.
But I think they did a better job of the nothing in Never Ending Story than they did for the movies and it in the darkness and these. Yeah. So
I don't know. I'm not sure that it's unadaptable. I just, there's things that the book makes me feel that these movies did not. So.
Right. I feel like the 2003 movie was doing okay for a bit. And then it fell apart. The pacing thing.
Yeah.
But like it did, I felt like the exposition was okay. The continuity was going. So
it was better written and better edited is what we're saying.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
At least for the problems I had with it.
Yeah.
Take them, push them together. Maybe it makes something better.
I don't know. What did you think of the 2018 movie? I didn't ever.
It is so different from the book. And yet a lot of the high notes are there.
Yeah.
The visualizations are incredible. They're inventive. They're creative. They're well done, which is not something you can say about the 2003.
Right.
True.
You know, I almost want the visualization capability from the 2018 movie put into 2003 and then knock off 10 minutes.
Yeah. I think so. One thing that I was thinking of that could fix the 2018 movie is Mrs. What's It is very close to Meg in the book. And in the 2018 one, the Reese Witherspoon is very standoffish and doubting of her.
Yeah, she is.
And explicitly doubting of her. Now, maybe she's trying to push her in a certain direction, right. But you don't feel that love that she has for her. And you very much feel that in the book. Mm-hmm. And without that there, it I don't know, it doesn't work quite the same way for me. You need the relationships to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe they were trying to push this whole idea about, you know, there's something wrong with Meg. Mm-hmm. And the only thing wrong with Meg is that Meg doesn't like Meg and trust in herself. Yeah. And that's reflected in all of her relationships around of her, except for Charles Wallace.
Mm-hmm. And Calvin. Yeah.
But then again, right, there was this book works this way, mm-hmm. and these changes, they don't work for us.
Yeah.
And since there's never been a sequel, I'm guessing that team, because there are five books in the quintet, and then there are more books in the Polly O'Keefe series that follow that.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff there to mine, but
yeah,
I don't think that the movie did enough to justify it.
Right. So should we rank them?
I think we should. I don't even know.
Well, okay, wait, how do you not know? I'll go first.
I'll go first. Uh-huh. I'll just set the tone. I'm going to say, I think the book was the best thing that I watched and saw.
Sure.
And although the pacing was hard, I like the 2003 movie better, even in the bad visualizations. And, you know, 2018 tried to do something. Mm-hmm. And based on my feedback and our feedback and the reviewers' feedback from 2018, I just don't know if it connected with audiences the way they hoped.
Yeah. Agreed.
No. Cool. I'm there with Colin.
Okay. Yeah. See, I had a better time watching the 2018 one, even though I thought it was sillier and, you know, it was better from a technical standpoint, better done, but like with the pacing, the writing was not good. Yeah. And so I do agree the 2003 one was better written, but then the pacing was off. And so I have a really hard time splitting hairs between those because I don't want to watch either of them again. Right. But if you put a gun to my head, I'd watch the new one. It's a little shorter.
Hmm. you know, I've gotten used to it over the years, and all these bad sci-fi we watched. I can get over the pacing thing.
Okay.
Can I get over the terrible editing and horrible exposition?
All right. I think we're wrapped. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's not talk about what we're going to do next time because we're going to go have dinner.
Okay.
So, all right.
Bless us.
I will bless us. I give you your faults, James. No, I give you your fault. I give you James's farts.
Wait, what
I give
faults?
I don't want James's farts.
All right. Let us know what did you think of A Wrinkle in Time and any of the adaptations. And until next time, may the road rise up to meet you and may the book always fall open to where you left off. I almost lost my train of thought there. So, all right. Bye, everybody.
Need food.
Yes. Need food.